From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Yesterday afternoon, Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth was on the Senate floor, making an impassioned plea to her colleagues in the aftermath of the massacre of elementary school children and their teachers in Uvalde, Texas.
How many more children will you allow to be murdered on your watch? How many more tiny bodies have to be ripped apart by weapons of war before you will stand up to the gun lobby and the NRA?
Well, minutes before that speech, Senator Duckworth was on the line with us. We spoke with her about the shooting and about inflation, abortion, and other topics in the news. Because this is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can talk with us in real time on Twitter at 21st Show. Senator Duckworth, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
It's great to be here.
So I want to begin with Tuesday's terrible massacre of elementary school students in Uvalde, Texas. Where were you when you heard about it? What was your reaction?
Just devastation. I was here on Capitol Hill. I just gut-wrenching. You know, I have a four-year-old and a seven-year-old, and it was just a nightmare. I can tell you that when I got home last night, I drove my girls crazy because I just hugged them and wouldn't let them go. And they didn't understand, and I didn't tell them why. But I was just so grateful that my daughters came home last night, and there were moms and dads whose kids didn't. And we've got to stop this. We have to end this. And we have the ability to do it here in this building, in this U.S. Capitol where I'm sitting right now. And time and again, I have colleagues who choose the gun lobby over our kids' lives. And that's just not acceptable.
Yeah, I myself have two young children, and I just couldn't stop thinking about the 19 empty bedrooms that are going to be in Texas now. What is there any realistic chance of legislation on firearms passing in the Senate?
Not as long as it's a 50-50 Senate. If the Democrats can hold the Senate and get two more senators who would be willing to help us reform the filibuster, then we could have this vote. But even if we can't pass it now, I think we have to have a vote on the floor. People have to be held accountable. I want my colleagues on the record choosing a side. And if they choose the side of the gun manufacturers and the NRA, then that needs to be recorded, as opposed to those of us who are going to choose the side of protecting our children and protecting law enforcement, who are the ones who have to go and respond to these active shooter drills, these active shooter situations. So I will gladly cast my vote on the side of the innocents, as opposed to my colleagues who will do everything they can to not have to be on the record choosing the NRA or choosing gun lobbyists, which is what they're doing every single day when they refuse to have this vote.
Can you remind our listeners where you are on the filibuster? Is that something that should continue in the Senate?
So I'm for reforming the filibuster. I don't think we need to eliminate it, but I just think it needs to be a transparent one as opposed to a hidden one. And by that, I mean, if you want to mount a filibuster, then go stand in the well of the Senate chambers with the cameras on you, with the people able to watch you and talk and speak on the floor for as long as you want to why you are blocking a particular piece of legislation. But this process we have right now that has only been in place since the 60s, since the Jim Crow era, where we take a filibuster and it's a hidden one, where we basically say, I'm going to filibuster this, you know, I'm going to filibuster a ban on assault weapons, and then I'm going to go on vacation to Cancun and not have to defend it, and nobody knows that I'm doing this filibuster. That needs to end. This secretive backroom stuff needs to end. And if we're going to have the filibuster, then let's do it out in the open. And then when you're done talking, let's have the vote. So I am all for reforming the filibuster so that we can get working again and start passing legislation, which is what my voters voted for me to come to Washington to do. They didn't vote for me to come here and hide in back rooms and have nothing happen and not do my job. Let's do our jobs. Let's go to the floor, make our arguments, and then let's vote.
There's a critique out there of Senate Democrats, or Let me rephrase that. There's a critique of Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer that he is too concerned about insulating himself from progressive challenges, which he would probably win, instead of incrementally working to enact the most doable parts of the Democratic agenda. I wonder what you think of that critique.
Look, I, you know, whatever you do, people are going to criticize. I think that there is a combination of both. You know, we passed an infrastructure law, and that was far less than what Democrats wanted to do. But we compromised and we worked with Republicans and we passed something that's already making a difference. So I would say that we do pass things that are incremental, that are not exactly everything that we want, but does make lives of people better. And I think we are in the process right now of negotiating, a budget reconciliation deal that's going to balance our bringing down the cost of gasoline and our country's energy needs, but also acknowledging the greater investment that's needed towards green energy and a sustainable carbon neutral future. So I do think that we are compromising. I do think that we're working together. The question is, are the Republicans willing to come to the table and negotiate with us and then actually cast the vote? Remember that not a single Republican cast a vote on the American Rescue Plan, and the bare minimum of Republicans cast a vote to pass the bipartisan infrastructure deal.
All right. There's a number of other topics that have been in the news lately I want to ask you about in the time we have. I know you've been following the issue of shortages of baby formula. Your children are beyond that age, obviously, but I know this is something that's, you know, reasonably fresh in your mind as it is in mine. And I also should say, I know you worked on legislation aimed at this problem, but where, in your view, is the main failure of the federal government in this happening? Is it a question of, you know, allowing too much consolidation in the industry? Is it a question of not, you know, figuring out how to allow European imports? Where do you see the big problem?
I think it's a very complex issue. I think that there are several things that happened that caused this shortage to happen. One is the fact that there is too much consolidation in the industry. Only a couple of companies actually manufacture all the different types of baby formula out there. If you go into a store, you're going to see, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of different types of formula, but they're only manufactured by two or three companies. And it turns out, in the case of Abbott, almost all of them were being manufactured in a single factory in Michigan. That's a problem. I had a meeting today with the FTC chair, the Federal Trade Commission chair, I had asked her, and she, via letter, to mount a public inquiry into what happened, and she has agreed to do that. So I'm very pleased we're going to get to the bottom of this. Another thing that happened was that when the FDA went in and inspected this factory and shut it down, they didn't tell the Department of Agriculture, and they didn't flag this for anybody, that, hey, we just shut down the company that makes 40% of the nation's formula supply. So there's issues with silos within federal government that we have to break through. There are also issues with the FDA being especially hard on inspecting formula manufacturers who want to get into the business, the beginning formula manufacturers, and yet not being thorough enough with the ones who are already in existence, so that it favors the established large companies, where smaller manufacturers that want to get into manufacturing can't get into it. And that further adds to the consolidation of the industry. So there's a lot that needs to be looked at. But I am, helping to lead the way, working with FTC to figure out what went wrong here, what are the lessons learned, and then what do we need to do to make sure we don't have a situation where this could ever happen again.
Well, baby formula is just one part of a bigger story of, you know, sort of declining consumer confidence in America. Some of that is inflation. A lot of that is gas prices. Where are Senate Democrats on addressing? A recent Pew survey said that inflation is far and away the number one concern that most Americans are concerned about right now. Where are Senate Democrats on responding to those concerns?
Well, let me tell you one place where I've responded to the concern, and that has to do with price gouging when it comes to people taking advantage of the pandemic. And in this particular case, oil, the oil industry. You should know that, right now oil is selling at about $110 a barrel. The last time that oil was at $110 a barrel, the cost of gas at the pump was about $3.60. Yet right now, with oil at $110 a barrel, it's going for $4.60. There is unconscionable advantage being taken of consumers by these large corporations. And don't just take my word for it. Take the word of the oil industry folks themselves. They've had record profits, and they're on the record saying that they are going to make as much profits as they can. It's why they stopped drilling on some of the oil wells that they have, where they already have the permits and their permission to drill. They've stopped because they would rather take their profits and buy back stock and give dividends to their stockholders than they would lower oil prices. So we have to go after price gouging, which is something that I'm already working on. I think we absolutely have to understand that working families are having a really hard time right now, whether it is even finding formula when you do, it is expensive, whether it is a gallon of milk or a gallon of gas. And we have to do better. And I know that we're Democrats are doing everything that we can to get more workers into the workplace so that we can have the workers working with FTC to make sure that we go after bad actors. And also working, you know, with Jerome Powell and the Fed to make sure that we properly monitor a monetary policy so that we bring down inflation, but also don't trigger a recession as well.
Another issue that's been on the minds of a lot of Americans, although displaced in recent days by other news events, is the possibility that, or the seeming likelihood, perhaps I should say, that the Supreme Court precedent of Roe versus Wade could be struck down by a majority of justices on the court. This is obviously Illinois is a state that is viewed as a haven and a sanctuary for abortion access. But we're, again, I feel like this is the same story over and over. What are the prospects of some sort of national approach to responding to what the Supreme Court does from the Senate?
Well, we had a vote last week, which the Republicans voted down because of the filibuster, and because Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin refused to reform the filibuster to allow the vote to happen, where we could actually pass a guarantee for women's health care at the 51 vote margin. And so we're going to continue to work on it. What people have to understand that the over...
And Senator Manchin actually joined with Republicans on that vote,
yes.
Right?
Yes. And you should understand that... the overturning of Roe v. Wade isn't just about access to abortion. It's about privacy. Roe v. Wade guarantees a person's privacy rights. In the case of of abortion, it's your ability to control what happens with your body. But it's also about things like in places like Oklahoma, where they've already passed a piece of state law that defines life as beginning at the fertilization of an egg, even before it has even become an embryo. That means that access to things like in vitro fertilization, which I use to have my two baby girls, will be out of reach. It means that birth control, like a IUD, will be out of reach because that prevents implantation of a fertilized egg. So let's be clear that the overturning of Roe v. Wade is more than just about access to abortions. It's about your privacy rights. And a state like Illinois, where women already travel 1,000 miles to come to us for their reproductive health care, we are an island in the middle of a sea of red where folks are doing everything that they can to take away Americans and in particular women's privacy rights. And remember, these are the same senators in all of these states who voted against Roe v. Wade who won't vote to ban assault weapons. They care more about regulating my uterus than they do about regulating guns on the streets. They care more about a fertilized egg that's not even a fetus yet, not even an embryo yet, than they do about 19 dead babies in Texas. And it is obscene that we're having this dialogue in this country right now where the life of children in an elementary school is worth less than a fertilized egg. It's wrong, and we can do better, and we should do better.
The last thing I want to ask you about is the COVID-19 pandemic, which unfortunately, as much as many of us would love for it to be over, is still with us. We're seeing cases go back up, hospitalizations creep back up. There are, as we go to air on Thursday, 8 Illinois counties that are at high spread. The Congress failed to pass more funding a couple of months ago to sort of continue some of the programs that would help address future COVID waves. Is there renewed interest, perhaps, given what we've seen happening with this disease, in revisiting that?
Yes, I hope that we can have this vote. It's up to the Republicans on whether they're going to try to attach any poison pill amendments to a vote on COVID relief. And I'm ready to vote for it. I'm even willing to compromise on some of the amendments that the Republicans are talking about. I don't think there needs to be, but I can't imagine that they would not allow us to have a vote to send relief out to all the states in the country. And by the way, I just saw a recent statistic that says MAGA Republicans tend to contract COVID at twice the rates of other Americans. We need to get help all over the country when it comes to COVID relief, not just to Democratic states, not just to different particular neighborhoods, but across the country. And so we should have this vote. And I do think we're going to have the vote, whether or not my colleagues on the other side of the aisle vote yes or not. Again, this is their decision, but I think we're going to get through. I think we're going to make it happen because, you know, I'm willing to compromise. If they want to have an amendment to the bill, then I'm willing to listen to their amendment and have a vote on it.
Senator Tammy Duckworth, thank you for being with us on the 21st show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.